As an aquaculture business, how do you balance market demand, protect and preserve the local marine ecosystem, and provide jobs to a challenged local economy all at the same time? This episode is dedicated to answering that question. So listen in, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome to episode 16, season 6 of The Business of Aquaculture. In this episode, I'm delighted to welcome back Rosalind Beitel. Welcome to the show, Rosalind.
Thank you, Lourdes. Thank you for having me back. So much has gone on since we spoke last time.
I know. That's why I'm so excited for an update. Rosalind is a partner in Fantasy Aquaculture, a triple bottom line commercial sea cucumber aquaculture company on the Caribbean coast of Panama. Their mission is to meet the global demand for sea cucumbers created by depletion due to overfishing, to regenerate local populations of sea cucumbers with all their myriad environmental benefits, and to provide economic opportunities in impoverished Caribbean regions. For my first interview with Rosalind, check out Season 3, Episode 14. Welcome back, Rosalind.
Thank you. I'm happy to be back because we have so much more to report in Panama. So I guess we should just dive right in, pun intended, right?
Yes, let's dive in. Go and let us know what's happening in the Panamanian, how do you say it now? Panamanian?
Panamanian aquaculture scene. Well, a lot of good things have happened. When we spoke last year, of course, I was telling you that oddly enough, the pandemic was our best friend because we were really able to ratchet up our research. Remember, we started in 2018 as a research and development company. As you know, Lourdes, there's a worldwide ban, actually, there's in place protecting the sea cucumber. So our first challenge when we first started was to see how we could get around that ban in a way that allowed us to be a research and development company and show the Panamanian government we're not depleting sea cucumber populations and we're not exploiting them, we're actually restoring those populations. So I'm very proud to say that in November of last year, we had several government ministers down to the hatchery and we did our first proof of concept harvest. We showed the ministers and we showed the scientists who were with us the whole process of spawning to adult. And we are proud to say that we have now passed that phase of Panacea and we are no longer just a research and development company. Along the way, we have cemented research affiliations, which are really beneficial to us. Maybe I shared with you last time that in Panama, there is a branch of the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute. And so they have a very clear relationship with us. And that's helped us considerably with data collection and scientific assistance. And then in November of last year as well, I actually visited my former university in Louisiana, which has an aquaculture program, and we signed a memo of understanding. And so we now have a research affiliate in the United States. And I'm very proud to say that 2 weeks ago, we received our first intern from LSU, from Baton Rouge. And so super happy about that relationship as well. So those are two really good, important things that have gone on since we spoke last. Then last month in Panama, Panama actually hosted the Our Oceans Conference. And wow, what a game changer. It was attended by over 1,000 people. And the U.S. Climate Change Ambassador, former Senator John Kerry, was the featured lead speaker. And I'm also very proud to say that as you walked into the Panama Convention Center, the Panacea booth was very visible right to your left as you walked in. And we were able to get that high profile spot because the Panamanian government allowed us to be featured under their organization, which is called ARAP in Spanish, A-R-A-P. That's the Panamanian government arm that actually grants us our permits. And so the minister of that organization is super happy with us because we're their biggest poster child. So we were very visibly present at the Our Oceans Conference. And so it's given us a lot of good feedback and a lot of good follow-up. Then next month in Panama, Panama's hosting the World Aquaculture Society Latin American Conference. So that's super exciting as well. We will be frontline, center, and visible in that. And that conference is super interesting because it checks a lot of boxes, the environmental box, but also the commercialization box, right? So aquaculturists are going to be there selling everything from water pumps and filters and talking about algae and just different types of aquaculture and different methods and innovations. So we're really excited that Panama is now attracting all of these conferences. So that's been a really big boost to us as well. So lots to report. If you have questions, fire away. I could talk all day, but you might have specific questions.
It's really nice to hear in a breath of fresh air to be able to hear how governments and industry are working together. That has been some of the challenges in some of the countries and the global pandemic, I guess, in a way from your geographical location has helped advance the industry instead of hamper it. So that's a really, really good news. And with all these affiliations that you guys are attracting, that's the way to do it, right? Support from government, support from research, and then the industry. And so, which leads me to my next question. I normally don't ask this question. You're actually the first person I'm asking this question. And I have a method to my madness why I'm asking this question. How is Panama being affected by some of the bank closures?
Some of the which cultures?
The bank closures. You know how SVB and then all these hullabaloo that's happening with First Republic.
That's actually an interesting question. Well, Panama, the country, not so much affected. You'd be very surprised, even though we seem to get thrown under a bus and they say Panama papers and whatever. Panama has some of the most stringent banking regulations. So in order to open a bank here or even place money into a bank here, the due diligence process is very strict. And actually, it's favorable for companies to locate here and put their headquarters here, because once you pass that due diligence, then you've really earned a feather in your cap. So I can say pretty securely that those particular bank closures really don't have an effect in Panama. And also in the aquaculture sector, at least Panacea, I will say we're very lucky in the species that we are focused on, which is the sea cucumber. It's the Holothuroidea mexicana. And it is a native species, and actually it's a very inexpensive species to cultivate in its own environment, which is the Caribbean coast of Panama. So we don't need a lot of bank input. We don't need a lot of private investment. We don't need a lot of government. We get no government funding at all, and it's all private, but it's a fairly inexpensive product to raise overall. So the banking controversy really has passed us over, thank goodness.
Yeah, the reason, and I'll tell you now why I asked that question, and it's twofold. And the first one is that because I know you guys are very much advanced in transitioning to blockchain and cryptocurrency. So I think it's been legal tender there for quite some time. And then the next reason is because I also know that Panama can grant some visa for or a passport for a certain amount of money for private investors, because I know that this species that you're specifically cultivating is not as supportive in other countries. And so I wanted to promote that if some people wanted to go to Panama and invest in the privately, this is a great, I guess, route to be able to do that, because it's such a supportive government. And so that's a really good way to where to park your money, especially now with the talks of BRICS. If you're following the news, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa are creating this currency wherein they can, I guess, literally not do business using the US dollars. And so this is kind of the method to my madness when I ask this question, which leads me to my next question. Yeah. So which leads me to my next question. So can you share with us a little bit in terms of any technology that you're using in your sea cucumber rearing, or anything along those lines that's an update from the last conversation that we have?
Well, we actually are trying to develop, along with the proof of concept from spawn to adult, we're actually trying to implement a lot of AI, a lot of artificial intelligence, things like cameras on the spawning tanks. We in-house during the pandemic invented a counting system, a technology whereby our biologists no longer have to sit and look in a petri dish and count larvae. So we have a whole grid system there, and it's sort of a, like, you know, you just sort of count some and then you extrapolate, and all that is done by cameras and scans. So there is a lot of research and technology going on coincidental to the sea cucumber and our algae production, so that we can, in the future, become a resource for other people who want to just cut and paste. Maybe we go to a different place and we say, look, you have this species of sea cucumber, but we now have the secret sauce. We now know how to do from egg to adult. We have the community engagement platform. We have the government buy-in. So we have the AI. We can cut your learning curve. You no longer have to stay up till midnight and watch them spawn and then physically scoop out the eggs from the sperm, which is what we ended up doing for our very first spawn in 2020. So we've come a long way technologically, and I think that's going to push things forward. When we scale all of the different parts of Panacea that we hope to scale.
Thank you again for sharing that. And that makes a lot of sense for me, you know, leveraging that you're creating it so it can be applied in other geographical location, and then they didn't have to figure out from the very beginning of what to do. But I'm going to be a little bit business geeky here next. And so maybe you can talk to us a little bit more in terms of the economics, like how much is it to rear, culture the species, and then what are you thinking in terms of market? How much are you going to sell it? What are you making in, I guess, just from the business point of view.
So we're a whole team, and our CEO, David Grossman, is very much a numbers guy, and we love him for that. I'm much more the community engagement, permitting, location, geographical thing, and government relations and corporate outreach. So I'm not super well-versed on the actual numbers. I know Asia is our biggest export market. I think what we are doing at first, we're not going to private label at first. This is going to be a slow commercial rollout. And so we're actually going to freeze dry, vacuum seal, and sell wholesale to an intermediary who will then private label, at least for the early part. Of course, in our long-term business strategy, we do want to put our own processing plant. We want to have our own dehydrators, our own eviscerators. We want to monetize the viscera as well as the spicules, dehydrate, make protein powder, make supplements. But that's a slow rollout, and we don't want to bite off more than we can chew at first. So we will be using locally another seafood processing facility for our first couple of trials, because this is also going to be trial and error. We are very much on board with my university, the Louisiana State University Food Testing Lab. They have agreed to do all of our food testing. So content, vitamins, proteins, minerals, carbohydrates, fats, any kind of testing, you know, they're on board to do all that for us. And that really is going to help as well. So it's a slower rollout, and we know the price in Asia. You can find that. I think it's something like $300 a pound. It's the third most expensive seafood behind bluefin tuna and caviar. So the price is quite high, and that's a good thing. That's another good reason why we have the right species, the right place, right time, right product, because in the Caribbean, it's not an expensive animal to raise. And remember, we spawn in captivity, we larval rear them in captivity, and then when they're a certain gram weight, we put them on the ocean floor. So we don't require any additional feed, and there they stay for about 12 months before harvest. So we can cut our overhead costs significantly by those grow out beds and having those open ocean concessions that are in protected areas. So the numbers are probably on our website, panacea.io, P-A-N-A-S-E-A.io. And some of the projections could be in our business model, but I'm not familiar with those numbers off the top of my head.
No problem, because you touch on a more important thing that I would like to highlight is because you're doing testing and proof of concept. I think when people go into business, sometimes they have a tendency to be too excited with the idea and then roll out commercially, and then they lose some money just because they didn't do it on a small scale first. But you guys have a very robust team. I can say that because when you mentioned that there's another person who's in charge of the numbers and you're in charge of the community engagement and regulations, that's a great thing to have in a small business specifically. And you were talking about too, in terms of payback period. I mean, the retail price can be high, and that's easy. You could probably anybody can see it from Alibaba.com. But in terms of when you were talking about of just 12 months, I think that's another advantage that your species had, is because it has a short payback period. So thank you again for being on the show, Rosalind. My biggest takeaway from our conversation today was you when you were talking about proof of concept. I think that's one thing that small to medium businesses sometimes forget when they get too excited with their idea. And obviously, a lot of things that's happened from your affiliation to your government support. So thank you again. How can they get in touch with you?
So I'm on LinkedIn by my name, Rosalind Vitel. And then our company, Panacea Aquaculture, PANASEA, we have a LinkedIn page as well. And then our website, PANASEA.io. And then we're on Instagram at Panacea Life. And we're on Facebook, Panacea Life as well. We're very active on social media. And you can find us any one of those ways, but feel free to reach out to me on LinkedIn, Rosalind Vitel, and happy to keep the conversation going.
Thank you again for coming back. To our subscribers, we appreciate your time listening to the show. Remember to subscribe to the podcast. And when you have time, please leave a review. See you next week. Thanks again, Rosalind. I really appreciate your time.
Have a good weekend. Take care.
Bye-bye.